Hey everyone, welcome to the Wildfowl Podcast. I'm your host, Skip Knowles, here with, do I have to say his name, Big Jim McConville. And we got a cool one for you today. Hopefully it'll leave you a little bit inspired to go out and do better at photography now that we're all into it. We've got our wunderkind here, our prodigy, a talented young man named Brandon Fien, who has been making waves ever since he was old enough to point a camera around, which was about when he got his first cover shot with Wildfowl about the same time he got his learner's permit. And he's just finished his fourth one for Wildfowl, which is the big dog issue. It's hitting newsstands, went to press last week. And it's a beautiful shot of a gorgeous black lab, like only Brandon can catch them, with a double banded wood duck, guaranteed to make your heart pound. But Brandon, how's it going, man? He came from California. Now you're in Colorado. Probably this winter, you were wondering why you made that move with the cold weather.
Yeah, no, this is actually this would have been my third winter in Colorado. I can't believe it's been that long already. But yeah, I lived in California for 18 years and moved out when I guess it would have been August 2020. So kind of during that COVID phase. And It was kind of a cool story how it happened. I mean, I'm sure you guys are all familiar with Jake Lissandras. He's a huge, leading role factor in my life and has been ever since I was really 15, 14, maybe. We met in California. He filmed a little piece on me and we just kind of been friends ever since. And
where did that little piece run, to be specific?
YouTube on Tango Free Waterfowl on their YouTube channel.
It's actually funny. How did you guys meet?
We met. I mean, you got to think I'm 14 years old and I'm just, I, like I said, I start posting pictures on Instagram, just kind of using it as like a portfolio, get an Instagram message from a guy, his name's Jake, and I'm reading through it and he's asking me a bunch of questions about how old I am and, you know, really personal questions. And I'm just firing back answering, and then he says, I guess I answered one of his questions in a way that struck him. And he responds and says that he wants to fly out and meet me and film sort of a documentary piece on me. And I was kind of looking at this and I'm like new to all this. I don't really know what's going on. So I tell my parents about it. And then Jake gets involved with my parents. And then a year later, he was in the Butte Sink of California filming with me and my dad in a duck blind. So it was really cool how that happened. And ever since then, he's kind of just been a mentor towards me. And fast forward 2 or 3 years, I'm 18, 17 years old, senior in high school. And this is, I think it was 2 weeks after I had got let out of high school because of COVID. And I honestly just thought that it was just going to be a 2 week break. I was going to go back. Then 2 weeks turned into a month, turned into 2 months, then turned into us never going back to school again. So, I mean, my first instinct was to ask Jake. I was like, hey, Jake, like, I don't know what to do after high school. Like, I this is my passion. You know this. This is what I want to do. And I think on that same phone call, he was like, well, if you want, you know, you can come move out here and work for me and we can work together and travel and film and take pictures. And ever since that, I was just sold and that was the plan.
One of the big parts of that story is Jake ended up doing a feature on you for Wildfowl magazine. And I want to say at that time you hadn't gotten your first cover yet. It was right after that you got your first cover for us. I can't quite remember whether you were 15 or 16 though. You were really young.
I was really young. I don't remember exactly which magazine, but I know exactly which article you're talking about. And he wrote that article when he was on the plane. I remember him telling me this. He wrote that article on the plane as he was leaving California. So right after, on his departure, after he filmed that feature piece, he wrote that article. And it was either in that first Big Dog issue or the next one. But he said a lot of kind words, and I'm super blessed. It's been a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's all the good stories are of all the super talents. They're doing it impossibly younger while other people go to college. You did a really amazing shot. Hopefully some of the listeners will remember. It was about 7 years. Nope, about 5 years ago, the preening pintail on the cover. It was different than the normal bird landing, the bird in the decoys. It was a bird standing there and prying at its own feathers and its wings with its bill. It's like a really intimate shot of a duck that, as Jake pointed out, caught the duck's personality. Then I think you're, instead of just the usual, you know, bird in the air, you really, it was like an intimate shot of a bird that we all love and is one of the most beautiful on earth anyway. It was a different way of seeing that animal than even us old veteran hunters and wildlife nut jobs had ever really seen before. And then I've been looking for a couple years for a photo of a real close-up of I've always loved looking at the dog's eyes when they're in a blind. I know Jim can relate to that, but I want a close-up of a lab's head, a real close-up, a macro like had never been done before for the dog issue. And and Brandon gave us that photo, man. It was amazing. Go ahead, Jim.
I want to chime in. That, you know, Brandon, super nice to meet you today. Very excited to hear your story. When Skip shared that test photo, I'm a dog guy. We've had labs for the last 15, 20 years. I went total bullshit. I went nuts. It was great. There was a close-up of the eye. I knew exactly what that was. And that was the first time I ever seen something like that. So I'm tipping my hat to you. People can't see this, but kudos. I love that photograph.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, no, I really do appreciate it. That dog wasn't even in the field. He was just sitting on my bed in my room. And I had
it makes it better. That is even better.
Yeah, no, he was I had my lights off, and for whatever reason, he was just sitting there looking out the window, and I grabbed my mom's camera. I mean, literally from her closet. Picked it up, and he was still sitting there, and just took the picture, and I didn't really think anything of it. Actually, I got it framed right there.
There it is.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
We're lucky at Wildfowl. There's not a million waterfowl magazines like there are, you know, for a deer hunting magazine. You got to put a big buck on the cover.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of competition. So we get to take some artistic lines and run some things that are a little bit risky like that. And that's a perfect example. Some of the non-hunters in our, well, not non-hunters, but non-waterfowl hunters in our company commented that, you know, it took them a second to know what it was. I'm like, if you're part of the audience that matters to what this magazine's all about, you'll know exactly what that is the second you see it.
Dude, that blew me out of my boots. I had to go back and put my boots back on. That was just I'm telling you, it was an incredible photograph. You know, I started hunting waterfowl probably at the age of 4 or 5, where my dad was kind enough to load me up and carry me out to the blind as a little kid. There was no hip boots for little kids back in the late 60s, early 70s. And I'm marking my age, but I'd go with my dad. And then I actually started carrying a shotgun at the age of 9. And dogs have always been, I think the older I get through this whole process and journey of waterfowl hunting and wing shooting, the dog has become more of an intricate part of the trip than a limited ducks, a limited geese or whatever. And some of the things dogs do during a hunt are, they're memorable. The dog's giving me a memory. I'm not making a memory with the dog. The dog's making a memory for me. And when you did that close up in the bedroom there with your dog, with your mom's camera, that, you know, that was just like a bucket of ice water hit me in a good way on a hot July day. I love that thing. That was a great photograph. Just great.
You're too nice. I appreciate it. No, and I totally agree. I mean, that's my dad's dog. I think his name's Crash. And you're totally right. I mean, that hunting with a dog, I've said it, is like flying without wings. It's just there when there's a dog around, it gives it purpose. And I mean, my dad has said this too. It's like for him, you know, hunting has become less about killing as far as it is just sharing memories. And now it's about, you know, watching the dog retrieves. Like he'll post more on Instagram about dogs retrieving than anything now. And of course me and my brothers, but yeah, no, it's like I said, and I work with dogs a lot, in the United Kennel Club. There's a very talented producer named Shannon Nardi that I work a lot with. That was another connection through Jake, and her whole world revolves around it. She started the Super Retriever series. She's done a whole lot of stuff in the dog world. So yeah, dogs hold a very special place in my heart, as I'm sure everyone else's.
Well, that's really fitting, because dog on the cover right now is just fantastic. And this kind of come full circle for you here 5 years later. You started as a teenager shooting cover shots for us, still not old enough to buy a beer, and you got another dog cover that is, it's an unforgettable one. It's more typical, but it's still a hell of a story in its own right. Tell us Tell us, I want to find out when you started photography. I remember you started out with a kit camera, but let's get on to that story with that double banded wood duck that's going to be hitting newsstands here as the next big dog issue of Wild Fowl.
Yeah.
Sorry, I never heard of the Sutter Buttes or whatever this Butte.
Yeah, so the Butte Sink. The Butte Sink is part of a complex of the smallest mountain range in the world, is the Sutter Buttes. And literally you're driving through plains or rice fields and all of a sudden you look out and there's just a small little mountain range. And what that mountain range created was a big divot in the land, which was why it's called the Butte Sink, because it's a sink, really.
Is this kind of like, west of Sacramento? What part of California?
This would be, it's in the Sacramento Valley. And I guess it would be,
That's good enough. Sacramento Valley. We know.
Yes, it's in the Sacramento Valley. But it would be, it's closer to Colusa, California, would be the closest town to it, or Sutter. But anyways, so that's primarily what I hunted through my teenage years, was the Butte Sink, which is a lot of history in that place of the world. And actually on a specific hunt, I was hunting a duck club called the White Mallard, with the property manager of the White Mallard. His name's Chris DeCatley, and that's his dog Lottie. And Lottie's just a fantastic dog. I mean, quiet and just straight lines. I mean, just can go into any tule patch and come out with a bird. It's pretty incredible. But anyway, so it's the last hunt of the season for me and my brother. And I knew that this was going to be my last hunt in California before I moved out. So it meant a lot to me just being out there. It's an afternoon hunt. Got out at, 1-2 in the afternoon. So we only had a couple hours of daylight, but it was a really cool setup. We're hunting in it, literally almost a perfect circle that's surrounded by big old oak trees. I mean, all of them are over 100 years old, big, tall oak trees. And then in the middle is flooded corn. And there's a ring of flooded corn. And then within that ring, there's a small little blind. And then, a 10x10 hole in the water. And that's where we were hunting.
Sounds like heaven, man.
It was. I mean, I wish I could have taken more pictures or gone back or something. But so me and my brother out there with Chris, and it was a gentleman's hunt. It was, he shoots one, I shoot one. And it was a really cool hunt. I mean, the sun was behind us. The wind was perfect. The birds were literally landing in our decoys all afternoon. And that hunt continued and the limit in California is 7 per person. So Adam had shot his 7 and I had 6. And for the last bird of the day, for whatever reason, I shot at this one and it was just buzzing by, and it was just kind of a reaction shot. It just clipped it, hits one of those oak trees, does a little ping pong thing down, hits the water. And I was like, well, this is the last bird. I grabbed my camera and I'm shooting the dog coming back with the bird. And the way she's splashing, I can't really see. And if you know anything about DSLRs, if you're shooting and you're holding the shutter, all you can see is, I mean, it's just like you're blinking really, really fast. So you can only see what's kind of coming through the lens. And then as that dog gets closer, I'm like, that there's something on that leg. And I'm already starting to freak out at this point. And the dog is back on her bench. I grab the duck and my dad has a video of it. And I'm like, we are screaming. Me and him are screaming. And for the rest, I mean, we couldn't believe it. We were shocked. I grabbed the bird by the band. And the first thing I see is that plastic one. I'm like, this is not. And then I look at the other leg. I'm like, no way. And I said some things that wouldn't be PG right now, but not good 17-year-old language. But yeah, no, and that was my last band that I ever shot. It was my last bird I ever shot in California. So it was meant a lot to me. It was really cool. And the fact that it was with my brother, it was made it all more special.
Yeah, it's so funny. We concentrate so much, especially with young men like yourself, young hunters, on first, Everyone's out to their first this, their first goose, their first that. That story is a beautiful one about last. It was the last day of the season, your last duck in California, the last bird for the limit, and the last bird on earth you better ever miss, even though it wasn't finishing. You just kind of shot it like a dove, you told me. You're wetting your pants and screaming when you saw the one band, then you saw it had two. And so where can we see this video, dude? I want to scream like a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah, no, my dad has it on Instagram. I could send it to y'all, but you'd have to go dig way down to 2020 or 20, whatever, whenever it was. January of 2020 is when that band was.
What would you pay to see that video, Jim?
Right. I'd love to see it. If you could send me the link, I'd definitely look it up.
Yeah, no, I'll have to send it to you guys after this video. But
let's get that on Wildfowl Instagram to promote this podcast. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, sounds good. I'll have them send it to me. But yeah, no, that's the story of that bird. And every time someone sees my, I keep it on my lanyard. And every time someone asks me about that plastic band, I tell them the same story. So it's really cool. And me and my brother, he had never shot a turkey. This is another cool thing about those stories. We got back invited to that same place, but during turkey season, and I went with my same brother, and he had never killed a long beard before. And I didn't really know much about turkeys, and it was pouring rain, and we just took the side-by-side out, and we were like, well, we're just going to go back to where we shot those wood ducks. And we're sitting under one of those oak trees, and it is pissing rain. It is not enjoyable to be out there. We set our decoy out, and we're sitting there. I'm like, well, we might see one. And then he loads his shell too hard, and all the oak trees light up, gobbles everywhere. I'm like, uh-oh.
In the rain,
I'm like, because he loads his gun too fast. I'm like,
reaction on the automatic,
semi-automatic. He's shooting a Beretta. I forget what he was shooting. But anyways, he loads it too fast, and all the trees light up, especially and the one that we were sitting under. I'm like, this could be really good or really bad. So for the next 45 minutes, the birds are getting out of the trees. And they're all landing away and running away. And I'm like, all right. And then finally one flies straight down, big old spurs, big old beard, attacks our decoys, and he shoots his first long beard in the same spot I shot my last wood duck.
Oh, wow.
Did you even call? Did you guys call?
Yeah, no, I was calling. Well, they were just firing off the whole morning. It was like, I mean, it was literally incredible. And the fact that we were doing it in the pouring rain just kind of blew my mind. I have a mouth call in, but we really didn't even need to call because he flew straight down from the tree to the decoy, was attacking the decoy, and my brother's all like trying to shoot it. I'm like, no, just watch. You're gonna remember this. He's like, I want to shoot it. I'm like, just watch. He's like kicking it because I had the DSD breeding Jake over the submissive hen, and he's just beating up the Jake. And then finally, when he stands on top of the hen decoy, I'm like, all right, you can do it now. So he shoots it.
What a story. You guys do everything, Valkers, man, because as we can all attest, there's no sweeter sound than that birds love to hear at the end of a long day when you haven't caught your limit, shot your limit, then unloading your gun. Normally the sound of a gun does bring birds in. So I guess it works on turkeys too, but except for loading, not unloading. That's a really cool one, man. It's funny. I don't think of California as a huge turkey state or a big waterfowl state, but that spot sounds amazing.
It really is. California has a very special place in my heart for the obvious reason.
Your third, or maybe one of my favorite photos you've ever taken, Jim, you remember this one?
I got it.
But it's like three goose silhouetted against the golden sky. Actually, we incorporated one of them, like so very similar. It inspired our logo, one of our wildfowl logos.
Yeah, no, I know which one you're talking about. It was like a sunset sky, and then there's those three Canadas that are silhouetted.
Yeah, it was really remarkable.
Yeah, that was a cool one. I think I shot that when I was 16. There's a local lake in my hometown called Pina Dobe. That was the same place I would always ride my bike out. You know, so I every time I go visit back home in California, I always go back to the same lake just to go look. I've shot thousands. I mean, I can't even count how many pictures have come off that lake, but that was one of them. And it was really cool to have you guys have a cover of it. Cause you know, every time you guys use one of my pictures, I'm always like a little kid again. I'm like, so excited. Tell my dad, tell my parents.
Real quick here, Brandon, give us an insight into how you became a kid with a kit camera from Costco shooting cover shots. If I remember right. How did you like that fire, and when did you realize there's so many photographers, everyone's taking photos now. You know, it used to be having a camera was something, it means nothing. Now everyone has one in their pocket and they're getting better every day. And you start to feel like no one could really ever stand out anymore. And here you were. So how did you get there?
I mean, this, like I said, this whole journey has kind of just been a roller coaster, and I've never really thought I was really any different. I always did it because I loved it. And I still do that. And I still am just as passionate today as I was when I first started taking pictures. of wood ducks in a creek by my house. And you know, the whole way this happened, and I was just so infatuated with waterfowl, and the love for waterfowl kind of progressed. You know, until I was 13 years old, I had played baseball, and that's what I thought I was going to do. And that was just, you know, my friends did it and I did it. And, I got an arm injury in high school whenever I was 13 years old. And so I started drawing, and I started drawing pictures of ducks, wood ducks, mallards, pintails, anything you could think. And I would look up pictures on the internet, and then draw that. And I think at one point it was, for whatever reason, I was like, you know what, I want to be the one to take the pictures that I'm drawing. Go in my mom's closet, and there's a Canon XT silver body with a 70 to 300 millimeter lens that come back. She used to use that camera to take pictures of me playing baseball. And I took that same camera, went out some creeks, and I think ever since then it was game over. That pretty much sealed the deal for me. I had so much of a thrill doing that. And I saw birds, or I saw waterfowl, in a different way because I wasn't hunting them. And I got to see some behaviors and noises, and I got to go places that I never would have gone if I had a gun with me. And that's kind of just transpired into this whole story. And like I said, that love for waterfowl is still the same. I'm still just as passionate. And I still love I just love showing people what, you know, how I see waterfowl and how it affects me.
A lot of guys just love duck hunting, and a lot of guys are just really nuts about the birds themselves too. It's like two different categories. There's some overlap. You see it in decoys. You see people who are just in love with the hunting, but you see people who are just in love with ducks. They're just duck nuts from the beginning. And you fall in the latter category, and we're all blessed to have you have that insane passion. We sure have been here at Wildfowl. So at your age, you've got 4 cover shots. I don't know how many you're going to end up with before it's over, but we appreciate you coming on, Jim. You want to say anything?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I know you're starting out in your career, and you're a young dude. What's the biggest mistake you made that you could help someone avoid if they were going to shoot pictures of birds?
The biggest mistake would be more of a mental thing. It was there was a period where I started getting traction and things started happening really fast for me. And I definitely let it get to my head for a period of time. I started worrying about, you know, the likes, the comments, the followers on Instagram. And that, as soon as that started happening, I just felt my creativeness just hit a brick wall, because I was doing it for the wrong reasons. It was simple as that. And I went through a big long lull of not really knowing what to do or how to be different. And I would say that was the biggest mistake, is when I started giving into that social media, like want to be the big guy, want to be popular. That was my biggest mistake. And I think I've gotten out of that. I really don't really care about that anymore. And now it's just, for me, I just pick up a camera and go. So I would say that was a big learning lesson for me. And, If that helps anyone, it sure helped me when I figured it out.
But so that couldn't ask for a better question to end things on. I really appreciate you. I hope everyone got a bunch of inspiration from that. You'll get even more inspiration, I promise. You check out the next issue of Wildfowl and see his photo on the cover of that double-banded dream duck. And I appreciate everyone listening. We'll talk to you soon. And we're definitely going to visit with Brandon again soon. There's a whole lot more to talk about with him, and I know that we can all learn a lot more from him, as well as just flat get inspired by someone who Jake LaTundras was smart enough to see was someone special right out of the gate. So thank you for listening. Wow. Until next time, check out the next issue of Wildfowl, and check out Brandon Thien's work. I'll talk to you soon.